Welcome back to the Sip and Feast podcast, episode number 43, Easter traditions. So this is going to be 8 days or 9 days from Easter when this one airs. It's going to give you plenty of time, I think, to get your whole game plan ready. The impetus, the inspiration for this episode comes from a viewer named Krista. And Tara, you have the question from her, right?
That's right. Krista says, hello, Jim and Tara. Hello again from Maryland. I'm curious to know what you guys make for Easter and the night before Easter as Italian Americans and any Easter family traditions. I come from an Irish Catholic family on my dad's side and German Lutheran on my mom's side. And our Easter is usually the Easter Vigil Mass, fasting all day. And Easter Sunday, we make some sort of steak dinner like filet mignon or prime rib. I'd love to hear your traditions. So thank you, Krista, for your question and for inspiring this entire episode.
Yeah, this won't be all inclusive what we discuss here. We're going to talk about stuff that I guess I did when I was young, the Easter traditions that I remember, because I don't remember everything. And then we'll talk about what we do now, kind of the modernizing of our traditions, and kind of we're a little bit more practical these days. Family's a little smaller, stuff like that. Before we get into it, I'll just tease this one up, this taste test. It's right in back of me. If you are a frequent viewer, you will realize that the taste test item is always in back of the two of us. It's right in the center of us. But for all you listeners out there, it's going to be a drink taste test. And don't worry, we will do our best, and I think we do a good job of describing everything we are eating or drinking and kind of trying to bring you here, even if you are just in the audio format.
That's right.
Would you say so, Tara? I think Yes. You did an excellent job in the previous episode when we talked about all the Trader Joe's stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Yeah.
Not as good as me. I mean, she did an okay job. I come on.
Whatever.
I mean, what do you expect?
I'll never be as great as you.
And well, you are better than me in one regard. You are a lot thinner than me, and I am worried about it's fast approaching when we switch the set here. We're moving to chairs that will not have this huge table guarding my belly like it does right now. So I'm going to sit in a chair, and when you see the wide shot, you're going to see probably from head to toe. So that's giving me a little bit of anxiety, Tara.
Maybe you should stop eating so much.
Well, it's tough because we're doing these taste tests now, you know?
That's what's the problem? I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm actually happy that we're going to have the chairs. I think it's going to be more laid back. This table is nice and everything, but I feel like it's a little too formal.
Yeah, I always say I kind of feel like, you know, Weekend Update.
Yeah.
You know?
It's too formal.
So, yeah, I like the chairs, more casual setting. I think that'll be more fun, more relaxed.
I think we'll keep talking about it until it's completed. So chairs are going to be green. This wall's going to have to change because I think green and gray will not work. I'm thinking we'll paint this like white probably. So everything will be different here. The only thing that won't be different will be the two of us. It'll still be us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until one of the kids pops on and stuff like that.
Yeah. Sammy expressed the desire to maybe co-host a podcast with you instead of me one episode. So,
well, that'd be good.
We might do that.
It'd be nice to get
future.
Her.
Yeah. Yes. So do you want to talk about some of the Easter traditions that you had when you were a child?
Yeah.
And then I can share a little bit about mine.
Yeah, so this isn't
to answer Krista's question.
Yeah, and do you want me to go first, or do you want to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
So this is not all inclusive because I can't really remember everything. I'm sure I'm missing something. Probably if my mother's listening, she'll probably correct me. I think though, for the most part, and this changed depending on whether we were at our house or at my aunt's house, like a family member's house. Because, you know, when you're going to someone's house, it's their, you know, they're the ones who get to set the rules, what you have. And I think we would rotate every year. So as far as the house I grew up in, there would always be stuffed artichokes for Easter. That was a common thing. We would start off with antipasto, you know, so there'd be like a nice spread of that. Church first, then antipasto, and then it would go into, maybe there would be like a something baked or whatnot, but it would always be then there would be like a pasta first, the baked pasta. Mm-hmm. So it would either be lasagna, stuffed shells, not really baked ziti. Manigot was common. That one, I think my mother did the most. And then after that, we would rest for a while. This was awfully similar to Thanksgiving. But then after that, we would rest a while, and then we would have the main course. And the main course would normally be a pork loin. I think in our house, it was a pork loin. I think later on, when I got older, my mom was doing the spiral ham. And then there would be some like roasted potatoes. There would be like green beans or some other type of green. There would be like a salad. But really the star of the show for us would always be the stuffed artichokes. That was kind of the one that everybody looked forward to. Mm-hmm. As far as like Pizza Gaina or Pizza Rustica, you might know it as, or Pizza Cina, it's all the same thing. It's a baked meat pie. We didn't have that. My mom said that she did have it when she was growing up. She said she had a family member that would always make it, and my mom hated it. So that's why she never wanted to make it for us. I believe, and I might be mixing up stories here, mm-hmm. but this was, I think she told me this relatively recently. Though I think we might have had it at some point. I'm not positive. Mm-hmm. It definitely wasn't like the stuffed artichokes were. So that's kind of my little thing, yeah. You know, and I'm probably missing some stuff too.
Yeah. So did your mom observe the whole fasting period during Lent?
Oh, yeah. She's strict Catholic.
Okay. So she would...
My mother's she's definitely afraid, like, you know, not being perfect Catholic.
So she would abstain from eating meat on Fridays. Did she actually fast from meat on Good Friday and the day before Easter?
You know, I think she did, but I can't recall, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah, it's hard to remember. Yeah. Because I know that's why the pizza gaina is kind of like the big deal. Like that's something that you would eat almost at midnight, right?
Especially if you went to midnight mass, then you would...
Midnight mass for Easter? I know that's a Christmas Eve thing.
Maybe not then. So maybe people just would eat it at when it got to 12 o'clock.
Yeah. See, I didn't grow up with that sort of heritage, I would say.
The school I went to, everybody was Catholic. Though yeah. Everybody's pretty much Catholic in Long Island.
Same for me. So where I grew up, same thing. Everybody was Catholic.
Not everybody, meaning the majority of people Long Island.
I was one of the minority. I was not Catholic. I was raised Lutheran. Although both of my parents were Catholic, they both converted to Lutheran when I was, I don't know, I might have been like 3 or 4. I know I was baptized Catholic, but then they switched. So we weren't really that strict with fasting during the Lent period. Although my mom taught Sunday school, so I grew up understanding that whole period of being like a very kind of like the holiest time, I feel like, during Lent, and especially leading up to Easter. That was kind of like the height of like the Holy Week.
Palm Sunday.
You know,
Rosary beads.
We didn't have rosary beads are a Catholic thing. That is not a Lutheran thing. Thursday.
I should know that.
I would go to church on Good Friday. At first, when I was little, I remember being taken to the Stations of the Cross mass, which was for children. And then as I got older, we would go to the Stations of the Cross that were for adults. It was very somber. I remember the pastor would, at the end, he would just walk out and slam the door. It was almost like symbolic of maybe the rock being pushed in front of the tomb where Jesus was. It was a very somber day, I remember. Oh. And then, you know, you'd go to church on Easter Sunday in the morning after the Easter bunny came. But as far as food and, you know, Italian Americans, I've shared on previous episodes that my connection to Italian American heritage was through my paternal grandmother. So my dad's mother, Jane, she was 100% Italian, last name Gallo. Her family came from Caltabolota, Sicily. So that is my connection to Italian Americans. I am a mutt, like true New Yorkers.
Yes.
Yeah. Anybody born on Long Island is a mix. I'm a mix of a whole bunch of different things. But my grandma, Jane, she passed away when I was in second grade. So I was about 7 years old. So I don't have a whole lot of Easter memories with her. In fact, the memories I have of that time of year specific to Italian Americans is actually with my dad's cousin, Mary. Every Palm Sunday, we would go to her house. She lived in Bayside, Queens. She's now passed on. But I remember her making a lot of food, which I actually, what stands out for me are her desserts. So she would make struffoli.
Struffoli is very
common. That is something we would have on Easter. And I remember we would get there and the struffoli pile was sitting there staring at us, but we weren't allowed to touch it until dessert. And she would also have cannoli. I know there was some sort of baked pasta involved, but I honestly don't remember. I just remember the desserts. Now, my mom was taught how to cook by my grandma Jane. So when my dad married my mom didn't, I don't think she really knew how to cook much. Her grandmother who raised her wasn't much of a cook. In fact, I think she was a terrible cook from my understanding. So my mom's cooking knowledge came from her mother-in-law at the time, Jane. So my mom would make lasagna for Easter. I don't remember other food on Easter. I know my mom made stuffed artichokes when I was growing up. I don't remember if we ate them on Easter. My Easter memories are very blurry, to be honest. In fact, I remember like the Easter bunny and I remember eating Cadbury eggs, but I don't remember a whole lot of what we ate on Easter Sunday. I remember always trying to give something up for Lent, but not observing a no meat on Friday. I think that was because we were Lutheran.
Yeah.
I don't think we were governed by the same laws as the Catholic Church. So we could eat meat on Friday, but I always tried to give something up. Like one year I gave up coffee for Lent.
Yeah.
And that was brutal. I drank coffee on Easter Sunday and I felt so sick after drinking
it.
I couldn't even eat the food. But what I will say is that my later in life connection to Italian American Easter traditions happened when my parents are divorced. My dad remarried a woman, Angelina, Angie, who was from Italy. She moved here when she was, I think, 9 or 10. And she introduced me to what is now one of my favorite Easter foods, and that is grain pie or pastiera. I had never had it before. And I remember having it was either at her house or her sister Rita's house. And I fell in love with it. They had gotten it from an Italian bakery near their house in Bethpage. And I loved it. And now we make it ourselves.
We got to talk about that.
No, that's it. Those are my memories of my childhood Easter and how they've evolved into my adulthood Easter.
Yeah, I mean, yours is similar to mine. I don't have that much. I mean, I feel like now we have to make all these different Easter stuff that, you know, truth is I didn't have these growing up. So I made a torta pasqualina. I think it's from Liguria. Okay.
Liguria.
So, okay. Yeah. Which is what I suspected because it's so much green in it. So that area of Italy, they do the pesto, green pesto with potatoes in it and the green beans. They'll do like a green lasagna, but I made this. I got to be honest, I wasn't the biggest fan of it. I think the regular pizza rustica or pizza gaina is superior.
I disagree.
You disagree? I kind of figured you would disagree with that.
I love the torta pasqualina because I really liked the hard-boiled egg that was in it, and I loved the greens.
You can add the hard-boiled eggs to your regular pizza rustica, people will do that.
The pizza rustica is more heavy. I feel like the pasqualina is...
Pasqualina is lighter.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of dishes with eggs. There's the Easter bread, which, you know, the colorful Easter bread, which is a brioche bread with eggs in it. There's also cassatiello, which is another Easter pie that is a Neapolitan specialty that looks similar to pizza rustica, but it's baked in kind of like a bundt cake round pan, and then it has braids on top with the hard boiled eggs. but we don't have that one on the site yet. But yeah, all of these recipes, not something that we really had and enjoyed. I will just, one little thing about the Pasqualina one. Honestly, I think it would be better if it was Greek style. I think, because I made it and I thought it needed the feta in there. Even though I put a lot of pecorino in there and ricotta and I think another cheese. I think I had like three cheeses in there. I just felt like it just didn't have what it needed.
I really liked it. But you disagree. So I disagree.
You disagree.
I loved it.
The amount of greens that I had in there, mm-hmm. and in Italy, they'll do, like I did some research on this, they'll do all different types like dandelion greens and other ones. I think I used predominantly spinach in it. Maybe I used escarole also.
Well, I have it up.
You know, and I gave options in it, what you can use, what you can't use. It took a ton of greens, a lot of cheese, hard-boiled eggs, and you make a crust, pie crust, that is a pasta fralla, which is similar to, honestly, what you use in a lot of different pies.
You use Swiss chard and spinach.
I use chard. Okay, yeah. There you go. I'm wrong.
And
I
then it has ricotta. Parmigiano Reggiano. It had a little bit of nutmeg in it.
So it had Parmesan. You know, it should probably have pecorino. That would make it better.
But if it's coming from Liguria,
that's why, you know, and that's the thing. Like I always hold back when I'm making dishes that I want to be true to the area. Like I'm like, okay, let me use the Parmesan cheese. But if you follow the videos in the channel and all that, you'll know my love for pecorino far surpasses Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. I just think it's just better. It's saltier. First of all, it's cheaper. It gives more of a punch. I was reading a Sicilian cooking book, and they said that Parmigiano Reggiano is unheard of in Sicily. Unheard of. Now, yeah. That book was written 20 years ago. It might be different now, but...
Yeah, no, I think pecorino, and it's another type of cheese that's...
Well, they have other cheeses, yeah. But as far as like the grating cheese, it's mm-hmm. it's pecorino.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's more versatile, like far more. The really pretentious cooking people will say it's too powerful, the pecorino. It's not as complex as Parmesan cheese.
So I do like Parmigiano Reggiano better than Pecorino Romano because I think it is a little bit more mellow and it has a nutty flavor, whereas the pecorino is more pungent. It's that sheep's milk flavor, and it's very salty.
But you needed that here. Without that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love this. All right. And I would
Thank you.
Eat it over and over again.
Thank you. So let's keep going.
Some of the other additions that we have.
Yeah. So I know I spoke initially about pastiera before I went on a tangent about the torta pasqualina. We're just going to do it in the order that Tara has here. So let's keep it
that
way. Well,
the way I've ordered this list is kind of like how you would start your Easter. So assuming you are fasting and you're going to break your fast, whether it's midnight or Easter morning, the first thing that you could have would be the pizza gaina, also known as pizza rustica.
Yes.
Pizza china.
Or the torta pasqualina.
That's right. And then
the cassatiello. Yeah.
Yes. Cassatiello. And we also talked about, you already mentioned this, the Easter bread,
yes.
Which is the brioche, which actually that is something that I have had when I was a kid. I remember going to the diner, I think on Easter morning
Greek.
And the diner would have,
that makes sense.
The brioche bread with the, Easter egg.
That makes sense. And by the way, that bread, you want to bake it in the morning.
Yes. So make the, what are they called? Like nests?
Make the dough
braids.
Overnight. Yeah.
Yeah. Make the braids overnight. And the egg overnight. You wouldn't put the egg in it.
No.
You would put the egg in.
In the morning.
In the morning. Because otherwise, if you put the egg in overnight, the dye from the Easter egg will start to seep
That's
in
right.
and will
even,
color the
Even still, the brioche. It tends to. I mean, I'm not perfect with
Which
this.
Which is like, it's not a big deal.
People will paint them with, you can buy like markers now that won't bleed versus if you use the traditional dipping dye, it will bleed. And, you know, look, it doesn't affect the taste. It's the looks though. And it really is, they're delicious little the brioche bread. Yeah. They're just fun. They're fun to eat.
It's fun because you get to eat the hard-boiled egg and the brioche bread. And it's really, I don't know, it's a really easy but delicious breakfast.
Yeah.
On Easter.
Yeah. Yeah, you got your bread and your eggs.
To counteract whatever the Easter bunny brings for you, right? Yeah. You don't want to just have sugar for breakfast. Yeah. All right. Moving on to later in the day when your guests start to arrive, you'd have antipasto.
Yeah.
Right? So like a antipasto platter, what are some of the things you'd put on it?
Well, I mean, you can go elaborate or very basic. You don't have to stick strictly to the Italian theme. I mean, I think shrimp cocktail are great. Mm-hmm. You can do stromboli, which is cooked, which, you know, it's not an antipasto, but then you can do mushrooms, marinated mushrooms. You could do marinated artichokes. You could do olives. You could do some meats, some cheese, caponata. Maybe don't get too carried away here, though. The thing about Italian-American food in general is that it's always carried away. That's actually one of the differences between the food, this type of food, and Italian food. Italian food is like, I eat a little bit of bite of pasta. I have a little bit of meat. Here, it's, Joey and Maria and the kids and the cousins and everybody down the street might come over, and there's 40 people at the house. So it's like you're making all this food thinking that an army's coming there, but in the end it's like 80 of you. So it's always better to have more than you need than not to have enough, because you can just have it for leftovers next day. But I do feel that that's kind of a major distinction that we don't talk enough about between the two types of food. Everybody likes to say like, oh, it's just, you know, it's like you eat too much pasta and all that. It's not just that. It's everything is too much. Everything is in excess.
Mm-hmm.
Any restaurant you see now that's like smaller portions, those are opened up recently within the last 20 years by people that are trying to inspire food and how it is in Italy.
Well, that's not just, I don't think that's just Italian Americans, though. I think that's just Americans in general. We eat like way more than other countries do.
It's true.
Yeah. It's just, I think having access to more
things. We have abundance.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have abundance. Everybody has more probably than we need, you know?
So after you've had your antipasto, whatever that may be, you might move on to having some stuffed artichokes, or you have a little adaptation to stuffed artichokes, right?
Stuffed artichokes are amazing. They are time consuming. They're very time consuming. No matter how good you think you are at cooking, they take a while. Prep can be difficult. Sometimes it's easier than others. Softening the artichokes, sometimes you need, if they're large artichokes, you really want to do it ahead of time. If they're smaller ones, you can stuff them and then bake them or put them in a pot. Doing them in a pot with liquid almost up to the top, covering it, is probably the best way to do them. Some people make them even in the Instapot. That's actually a really good use for the Instapot, that if you watch this, you know, I don't like the tool, because I don't like to have extra big honking tools around that I barely use. But in that regard, the Instapot is good for the artichokes. They take a long time. There's really no way around it. Every time I make them, and you know, it's a mess. You're pulling all the pulp out of them, and like the choke, all that. It's like the thistle-y part, and you just got this huge mess, and then you're like, got another, all these buckets of water, because you have like vinegar water or lemon water, so it doesn't turn black, and you need a big work surface. Mm-hmm. And then if you have like 30 people and you're making 30 of these, it can really be overwhelming for a novice cook. So when restaurants make these stuffed artichokes, they make them days in advance. They're in the fridge. So when they get an order at a place, they probably don't even keep them in the fridge. They're probably out like rooming up. They just take one and then they put it in the oven, and they put more liquid in there and then they serve it, because these things take forever.
Mm-hmm.
You do the same thing, prep them ahead of time, or you could do the easy way, as Tara said. You could just do the baked artichoke hearts with all of the same ingredients that a typical stuffed artichoke would have.
Yeah, so it's much easier and tastes just like a stuffed artichoke. It's not as fun to eat. Part of eating the artichoke is the fun. You're You're scraping the breadcrumbs off the leaves, eating the filling, and finally you're rewarded at the end with the artichoke heart, which I think is one of the most heavenly foods on this planet.
Yeah, it's so good. It's such a it's hard to like describe how good it is.
It's there's nothing like it. I mean, you can buy the artichoke hearts in the jar. There's nothing that compares to eating the heart from a stuffed artichoke.
They do have nice ones I've seen. Italian specialty stores will carry them. They're way bigger and they're prepped. Often they're halved. Mm-hmm. Much higher quality than the ones you get in the can that are smaller.
Yeah.
So that's an option too if people have access.
Yeah.
And like they'll have like all the way down to the stem. They'll probably have like the top of the artichoke heart, like the artichoke mm-hmm. heart itself, and probably 4 or 5 inches of stem.
Yeah.
All shaved perfectly. So it's completely edible. You know, one thing we never talk about and it tastes similar to artichoke hearts are cardoons. So we never mentioned those.
That's right. That's something that's big with, I don't know if it's just big with Italian Americans. It might also be like something from Italy too. But I feel like Italian Americans, it's very much a cultural.
Yeah, and it's not just thing. Italian. It's not just Italian. It's supposedly parts of Africa too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. From what I just read.
Yeah.
They have a similar taste to yeah. it. But yeah, they're fried and you eat them. I don't know if it's particularly an Easter thing, though. I'm assuming it probably is consumed mm-hmm. on Easter too. But people ask often about them. I'm like, no, I don't have them because what am I going to do? I'm going to make a recipe for that and like 5 people are going to be able to get them. You know, they're not even going to know what it is.
Meat Farm sells them on Long Island. Yeah, they do.
How do they look?
What do you mean, how do they look?
Like, do they look fresh when you walk
yeah,
by them?
They look yeah. good. Yeah.
Yeah. We got to try it then.
We should.
Yeah.
We should put a recipe up because a lot of people have asked for
they
it.
They do. Okay.
Yep. So after you have that, you may move on to a baked pasta.
Yes.
Like lasagna or, as you would say, manigot.
Yeah. Yeah. Or manicotti.
Manicotti, as I say it.
Hey, manicotti.
Stuffed shells, right?
They always like joke like somebody in the family can eat like 20.
That was my dad.
Yeah.
He could eat 20 regular, they always said 20 regulation size manicotti.
Regulation size.
And I'm
size,
like, what
yeah.
does regulation size mean? But my dad was known for being able to eat a tremendous amount of food and still be relatively thin.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, his appetite has been curbed a little bit as of late, but he used to be well known as a good eater.
This actually brings back memories because I, as I said in the intro here, I don't have too many memories of Easter dinners. I feel like Thanksgiving is the one that like is more etched in my memory. Mm-hmm. But I do remember fighting, I think with my brother about when like the ravioli or shells or, you know, the manicotti were like towards the end. And I was like, oh man, like I'll flip you for it.
Because like, what, you were going to trade? Like yeah, you were going to take his food?
Because like you want him. And then, but then like, it would always be my mother or family member would be like, you're not going to be able to eat the pork, you know, or you're not going to be able to eat. We got the stuffed artichokes still coming. So yeah.
What about baked ziti?
We never did the baked ziti. I think the baked ziti is a great idea because it's the easiest one of all of them to do.
Yeah.
Though ravioli is simple too. You buy ravioli from the ready-made ones. From,
yeah.
What was that brand that the guy said? It's like pasta.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Posto? Yeah. It eludes me.
Yeah.
We don't actually buy any ravioli, really. We don't buy any of that stuff. I know you think we eat pasta all the time, but we don't. In fact, I feel like I've been making meat dishes nonstop now for the last year or so. Yeah,
that's you've been doing a lot.
I think we lost a lot of viewers. We had like a sizable contingent of like vegetarian, vegan viewers who would adapt our recipes.
I think we still have those viewers.
I hope we do, but I think
Jan is one of them.
I think
Jan
they got
messages
mad.
Us. No, I don't. I don't.
They got
think
mad
so.
With all the beef dishes.
No, I don't think so. Okay. I think they understand that. We're omnivores and that's who we make our recipes for. I think they're appreciative when we do put out a vegetarian or vegan recipe, but I think a lot of vegetarians know, okay, Jim's recipe for puttanesca has anchovy in it. I'm going to just omit the anchovy and I can, that's easy to make vegetarian. Or, you know, I think they know what they need to do to make the adaptations to our recipes.
Yeah, no, I realize that. I mean, I would hope that most people think we're not like trying to stick it to one cuisine. Honestly, what happened was we were slumping on YouTube for a while and we were doing a lot of those, yeah, those vegan vegetarian recipes. They just weren't working. We weren't getting the views. We definitely weren't getting the views that we needed to justify.
Well, it wasn't even just doing that. I mean, we did a drink video that did not do well. Like, we were trying different things and we couldn't seem to get out of this slump.
You go in a big slump, you know, there's a little inside baseball here, but if YouTube always judges you by, they always tell you like, this is your best video out of the last 10. It's always out of 10. So people who do this stuff for a living, they're like, oh, I had a 10 out of 10. It's like they're like sticking it to you. They're like, you suck, you know? And then if you get a 10 out of 10 and then you get another 10 out of 10, so like 2 weeks in a row, it's like devastating. It could take like months, because what happens is it's all just algorithm based. It's all just like, oh, like nobody likes this guy anymore. This guy Sip and Feast is a loser. Like, let's just move on to the next guy, you know? And then it's like, people will message us. They'll be like, what happened to you? I'm like, I've been here the whole time. I'm like, you just,
yeah, it's YouTube isn't showing.
I'm invisible to you now, yeah. Because, but then it works the other way. So if you get a 1 out of 10, then it's like things get reset and then they tend to show things more to people. So what happened for us is we put out a bunch of bombs and then like stink, everything kept, was just, you know, stinking up the joint. And then we put out beef bourguignon and it skyrocketed. And so I was like, oh God, well, all right, we got to do beef. And then every beef I put out after that did well for a long time.
Yeah. So that's why we were like, oh, we got to keep making beef recipes, because that's what YouTube is showing people right now. So a lot of times when we're making recipes for the website, it's what we want to put out. But sometimes for YouTube, it's like, all right, we have to put out what we feel intuitively YouTube is going to show people.
Yeah, it kind of stinks. And that's why you can see, and it doesn't really matter for us, because it's just the two of us. But think about like these YouTubers that got 20 people that are working for them. Like, mm-hmm. All these people have like families and they got to pay their mortgage and their bills. So these YouTubers, then they go crazy. They're like, okay, every video's got to be better than the next. And it's just, it's not sustainable for them. It's really not. And hence you see all these YouTubers quitting. A lot of them are quitting or scaling back, getting rid of those teams. And it's probably a really tough conversation when they're letting them go. But, you know, for us, we do want to do well, but there's not a lot of people are hinging on this.
Yeah. It's just us, really.
Just one, the guy who's editing this video right
here.
That's
right.
Yeah. Which we really appreciate, Billy.
Yes, we do. Let's move on. We talked about the baked pasta course for Easter. Up next is the main course. So you talked about your mom making the pork loin. At some point you switched over to the spiral ham. One of the things that we've been doing since Sammy was a little girl. So this has to be for at least the past 12 years, you've been making lamb.
Lamb, yeah.
For Easter. Ever since we started hosting Easter ourselves, we've been making lamb.
Yeah, my mom didn't do the lamb really when we were kids. I think it was a little intimidating to her, and I think it might have been a little costly. Lamb is more accessible now than it was when we were young, but that all being said, lamb is still not an Italian thing. It's more of a Greek thing. So now, if you do see Italian recipes for lamb, most of the time it's not a whole leg of lamb. Mm-hmm. It's like chops or, you know, there's a place in Italy. It's like northern Italy too, where they eat a ton of lamb. Mm-hmm. But it's not the same thing. Like when you think of that ubiquitous lamb with potatoes, that's a Greek dish.
Yeah. Well, actually,
Or the whole lamb.
Well, that's, my friend Catherine, she's Greek. I used to love hearing about her Greek Easter. Like, she would come in because it was usually like a week after. It didn't really sync up with our Easter, but she would tell me, oh, we had a pig and we had a lamb, or we had a full goat and we had a full lamb. Like, And all the food that she would describe always sounded so good. I was always so jealous.
I just want to correct myself as Tara's saying that. There is Italian lamb head too. That's...
the caputzel. Yeah, caputzel. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Just before you're probably yelling into the camera right now or yelling into your radio receiver, Jim, I had to eat the lamb's head when I was growing up. Well, there you go. That's it. Yeah. No, I did not have the pleasure of having that. My mother would... that would never happen.
Can you imagine? I can see your mom making lamb head.
Oh my God. Imagine if she tells us that one time. I'm like, well, now we know something's going on.
Yeah. No, I can't see that.
Yeah.
So the way that you prepare the lamb that we have on the website is boneless, roasted leg of lamb with garlic and rosemary.
Yeah. And like just herbs, garlic, rosemary. Like just really well seasoned with salt and pepper. It's kind of foolproof for people.
Yeah.
Even in the video, I show you how to tie it, like how to do a slip knot and all that, because that could maybe be a little bit intimidating. There's not a lot of good tutorials online about how to just slip knot or a butcher's knot. It's the same thing. Like how to do it and how to turn, because you want to turn the lamb into a cylinder. When you open up a leg of lamb, now remember that boneless leg of lamb has been deboned. So the butcher removed the bone for you. But by doing that, he had to cut away all these tendons and, like ligaments and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he like glands, actually. I know you're like really, you're salivating right now, right? But that's all the stuff that he cuts away to remove that big ball joint of the bone. So now it opens up completely, but then that's what you're left with. So when you see it in the store, it comes in a net, in a plastic net and everything. And then you're like, the second you open that all up, it all opens up.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to tie it back.
That's right.
And you're better off trying to tie it back like a football, like I did in the video.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of reshape the thing.
Reshape it. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a little difficult.
Yeah.
But not too difficult, because Sip and Feast takes care of you and shows you exactly how to do it.
Mm-hmm. And that is so good. I did not grow up eating lamb, as you may have heard me mention in previous episodes. I was raised vegetarian from the time I was 8 years old until I started like sneaking chicken in my school cafeteria because I was dying for some meat. So I never really grew up eating lamb or anything. And once you started making it, it became one of my favorite things to have. And I look forward to having that every Easter.
So, and by the time, thank you. And by the time people see this, we should have leg of lamb, bone-in leg of lamb, Greek style. So just so you know, that'll be easier than doing the boneless, because you're not going to have to tie it back up. You just got to open the package season it well. But the whole Greek style is you roast the leg of lamb on top of potatoes that are in liquid. And then the potatoes absorb the liquid, and the liquid also steams the lamb to make it moist. And then when the lamb is tender, you remove the lamb, and then you continue to cook the potatoes until they absorb all the liquid, and then they start to moderately brown. They're not going to get as brown as doing a standard roasted potato with no liquid, obviously, but they're still delicious, and it's a Greek specialty.
All right, so the lamb, the potatoes, we'd also have some type of vegetable. So cauliflower, asparagus, green beans with garlic and oil. Those are all, I think, some good side vegetable dishes to serve on Easter. Anything else you'd add there?
No, I would just be creative and do what you like. Don't worry about what, you don't have to follow any strict formula here.
Mm-hmm.
If your family wants something, that's what I would make.
Yeah. And then my favorite part is the dessert.
The desserts.
Yeah.
The star of the show.
The pastiera is the best.
Pastiera, in my opinion, is way better than the struffoli. The struffoli look good. They don't, they don't taste as good. So the struffoli, if you go back historically, they actually share a lot of similarities to the Greek fried dough balls that are called...
Lugamatis?
Yeah, Lugamatis,
hold on,
yeah.
I want to make sure I don't want to say the wrong thing. Those are Greek honey puffs.
Yeah, because remember, Greek... Italian, all the same thing before they weren't Greek and Italian, okay? It was the Roman Empire, and those things probably, that's why there's such a similarity. But honestly, if I had to pick, I would go with the Greek one again. They're
was
better.
Greece part of the Roman Empire?
Yeah, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, Eastern province of the Roman Empire. Tara's making me go nuts. Like, I'm like, of course they were. Yeah.
Listen, somebody's got to fact check this stuff, okay?
No, but that's a similarity. That's why a lot of the foods, there's so much overlap. You know, like, a lot of people that get tested now from DNA tests who are in Sicily, they come back as Greek, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously there's a ton of people moving through the area.
So the eastern part of Sicily, I believe, is heavily influenced by Greece. There's in Taormina, there's like the Greek amphitheater that's there. And
then the western part,
I think the western
is
part is North African. African influenced. Like you'll have the couscous and
yeah. It's too much of a tangent there. But anyway, I think the honey, the Greek dough balls are so much better because they're softer. The Italian ones that are called struffoli, they actually don't have any baking powder or anything in them, though you will find recipes that do have baking powder, but they're very small. Really, you want to make them like the size of your fingernail, like your pinky fingernail, like really small. And then you can build these elaborate shapes, pyramids, whatever you want. And then you put this candied citron, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, you can do that, or you can do nonpareil.
Or nonpareil, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the candied, is that candied citron? That's what it is, right?
Yeah, candied fruit.
Yeah. Tara bought me like a whole huge container of it last year. It's in the back of the fridge. It's probably bad right now, growing mold or something.
Science experiment. You
know, probably not going to use that this year.
Probably wouldn't use that.
And I don't feel like making struffoli either, because talk about a pain.
You can buy struffoli. Yeah. If you live on Long Island, you can go to Uncle Giuseppe's or a lot of bakeries will have it.
If you
want to try it.
Yeah.
You know, it is easier to buy it than it is to make it. Same with if you want to get Italian pastries for Easter, it's easier to buy the cannoli than it is for you to make it at home. I mean, that's a tough one.
I think we say this every three episodes. Yeah. Do not make your own cannoli.
Make your own cannoli cream, and you can buy the shells from a bakery if you want.
Most people aren't going to be able to make the good cream unless they can get the
impastata
that is a super dry ricotta. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll just use regular ricotta. You can't. It just won't be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And typically that impastata, you got to go to a bakery, ask them, they'll probably sell it to you, because otherwise you got to buy like a big 5-gallon pail of it, you know?
Yeah. But I would say if you're going to make one Italian dessert for Easter, you should do the pastiera, because I think it is special for Easter.
The best.
And it's the best. It's made with granacotto, which is a wheat berry.
Yes. Barley, right?
Is it barley?
Or farro? It's wheat berry.
It's wheat berry. And you can get it in an Italian grocery store, but you could also order it on Amazon. And there's orange zest in it. There's orange blossom water, which you don't need to put in if you can't find it. It's just my favorite dessert. It's so good. If you don't want to make that, some other desserts you can make an Italian cheesecake, which actually tastes, I think, very similar. Just doesn't have the grain in it.
It's very easy. Tara's right. An Italian cheesecake is definitely the shortcut to having similar flavors to the pastiera napoletana. But the thing is, the pastiera is just, to me, it's the best thing. It's the best thing about Easter. I absolutely adore this dessert. It's probably my favorite dessert.
It's so the filling, like I said, is made with the ground. I just want to describe it for people because I feel like I'm not doing a good enough job of describing it. It's made with that wheat berry filling, and the crust is a pasta fralla. Is that right?
Yes.
And then you
make window panes.
And then you'll make the lattice shape for the top. So if you go into an Italian bakery and you see a pie with the lattice top, it's most likely the pastiera.
Yeah, and there's a variance of how they make it here. So there's a lot of Italian bakeries here in Long Island. There's, you know, plenty in all the other parts of the five boroughs and New Jersey. And they all do it a little differently. We've had really good ones. We've had some bad ones. So I will say simply, if you follow our recipe, I think you're going to make one of the better ones. It's that good. Now, I screwed up the first time I made it. For the photos, I didn't do my lattice correctly. Taste-wise, It's the same. I also didn't bake it long enough the first time. So depending on how you make it, a lot of times the bakeries will make a much smaller version than I did. Mine was fairly high, and I used an insert pie, you know, like tart pan, which you need for this dish. Because if you don't do that, you can't get it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have to, we have all the equipment you'll need if you want to make this. It's all linked on the recipe. And, you know, if you want to try something different this year that's really going to impress a lot of your family members, I recommend that you make that one.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's a good one. And if you do make it, let us know how you enjoyed it.
Yeah, let us know. There's plenty of recipes for it. There's also a lot of shortcuts for it where you don't have to use the granicado. You can use rice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can do it differently. You can use just barley or farro. I mean, there's other ways to do it. I think the granicado is barley.
It might be. I know it's wheat berry.
It's very,
so if that's,
yeah, it's like,
that's, it's very similar in texture and taste. I don't know if it's like scientifically like the same thing, but yeah.
You make a cream, you're mixing it together. You're making this really delicious filling with the orange flavors, and then it's going in this pie shell, and then it's getting a top, a lattice top. And when you taste it, it's very unique. You know, I often say, whenever we talk about desserts, my favorite dessert is a cannoli or
sfogliatelle.
But I never really include the pastiere because I only really think of the pastiere during Easter.
Yeah. So, a lot of times people will call it Easter pie.
Easter pie, yeah.
But people also call pizza gaina Easter pie.
That's right. That's always the, that confuses.
It does.
Yep. All right.
All right. So, Krista, we hope we answered your question in, you know, I don't know, 40 minutes or however long this episode was, but thank you for sending that question over and for inspiring this Easter episode.
Yeah. Thank you, Krista. And now we're moving into the thing you're actually here for.
They're here for the other
stuff. I'm kidding. I know. I always joke with Tara. I'm like, if these taste tests start doing a lot better, I'm like, are people going to be like, Jim, we don't even want to hear anything else. Just get to the taste test. Well, we're going to do that right now. Okay, so these will be recognizable to you if you're from New York and you are over 50. If you're not, it'll be less recognizable to you. I would say if you're under 35, you might not even know what these are, even if you live in the city.
I think if you grow up in an Italian-American household, you're going to know what a Manhattan special is.
I don't know. I feel like...
You definitely will. These are in pork stores.
I know, but they're very niche. So anyway, the article I read in the New York Times... Now, I've always known these, okay? Mm-hmm. I've always known about it. I don't know why. I just feel like... I feel like even in the early 2000s, I would see them everywhere in the city. But it could have been I was just looking for it. But the article was from 2008 in the New York Times, and it said that it was like talking about the owner. They were interviewing the owner. They're saying that they went from being everywhere to being an extremely niche product. That was in 2008.
Okay.
2008.
Yeah.
So it's almost 20 years ago.
That's frightening. But no, that's true. I mean, the only place I do see these are Uncle Giuseppe's, or if I were to go into a pork store, I would see it.
And these are very expensive. So I went on, I just wanted to check prices for you before we actually get into what these are. But these Manhattan specials, they're made by a company that started before 1900. It's an Italian immigrants. And this is the one that they originally are known for, which is the espresso. Okay, it's like a coffee soda. But yeah, they had like a booming enterprise, and they still do, but again, they're niche, and you can order them on Amazon, but they're awfully expensive. Amazon will sell you a 6-pack of them. It's on Prime. It was $27, I believe, or $35. It was very high. For a reference for us, we were able to buy these for $2 each.
Right.
At Uncle Giuseppe's.
Yep.
Which is still a little bit high. I think you were able to get these even cheaper in like bodegas and stuff in the early 2000s.
Hmm. All right. Well, so we have three flavors here, right? Yeah. We have the original, which is the coffee or espresso flavored soda. We have creamy vanilla, and we have an orange flavored Manhattan special. So do you think there's an order?
I think we'll save the one they're known for last.
For last, because I think that's going to be the strongest.
Yep.
I would maybe go from like kind of similar to when you do a wine tasting, you start with the lighter. So let's start with the vanilla. We're going to share the bottle.
because we actually are married to each other. It's, we're not just fake husband and wife. And even if we were fake husband and wife, I would still share it with her. All right. Well, I didn't get much fizz there. I hope it's all right. Go ahead.
Yeah, there is no fizz. I feel like maybe we should have poured it into a glass.
Let's just see. No, there's fizz. There's fizz.
Yeah. Tastes like cream soda to me.
That's good.
It is good.
It's okay, like so you could see our disparity right away.
Yeah, I mean, it's cream soda.
Tara was not impressed. I think that is one of the most delicious cream sodas I've ever had in my life.
I'm not a big soda drinker in general.
Neither am I.
That's true. Although sometimes when we go out to the diner, you'll order a Coke.
And it's sometimes it's so disappointing. Like, I'll order a Coke. And by the way, your safest bet is a Coke. But sometimes I order a Sprite, and I'm like, when did you change these lines? Like 1986? You know, like it's... Like I told Tyler, I'm going to die. I'm going to die tonight eating my mediocre Greek salad, you know?
So you're a fan of the creamy vanilla.
Yeah,
good. You keep sipping it.
It's really good.
Can't stop, won't stop. Pop open the orange because I want to try that.
Well, before I pop open the orange, let me just tell the nutrition here. It has 46 grams of carbs, so it's high in sugar. That's all it is.
Clearly.
That's all it is sugar. And actually, when I was reading that article, they said that the owner, again, this article was from 2008, he was so secretive, he wouldn't even let them in to photo. I mean, he wouldn't even let them in, period. Mm-hmm. Forget about photoing. He finally acquiesced and let them in, but he would not reveal anything about the ingredients in it, like about their special, yeah. Manhattan special, and no photos were allowed. But it, basically, the article was saying that they have had to adjust to the times. And again, this is almost 20 years ago, and they were starting to sell online. Right now, if you go to their website, you can buy a 12-pack from them for $27. The problem was the shipping is $18. So I added it up, $27 and $18, $37, $45. So you're at $45 for 12. And then on Amazon, it was $20 or $36 for 6. So obviously, if you want to get it, go to Manhattan Special's website, but it's still so expensive, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, we just want to tell you what the pricing is. All right, let's go to the orange.
Crack it open.
Tara, go ahead.
It tastes like orange. Tastes like orange soda. See, I'd rather have the aranciata Pellegrino.
That's pretty good, though.
Yeah, but it tastes like orange soda.
I think Tara's being a little rough. By the way, I've spoken about in the past, the companies that built New York, okay? You think of like Polio, okay?
Ronzoni.
Well, Ronzoni's, I think, is later. Boar's Head, okay? There's a whole bunch of them. A whole bunch of them that I'm forgetting. This is one of those companies. This company was founded in the 1890s. Mm-hmm. And they're still around.
Yeah, that's
like
pretty
cool. Like, they didn't sell out to anybody.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's pretty cool. I like that. I want to try the...
Entenmann's. That's another one. They sold out. They're no longer Entenmann's anymore.
I do like Entenmann's. All right. This is the one I want to try.
Yeah, and let's see if they say anything for ingredients here. Nope. There's nothing... contains carbonated water, pure coffee, cane sugar, caramel color and preservatives, potassium sorbate, sodium benzoate. So yeah, they're not revealing anything. Tara, I can smell that. Right when I opened that, I got a whiff of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it tastes like... I have to say, I'm very underwhelmed with all of these. It tastes like carbonated coffee. Carbonated iced coffee soda. That's very sweet. But honestly, I think I could go the rest of my life and not have any one of those three and be okay with it.
Oh, yeah.
They taste good. They don't taste bad. Like, I expected to be like blown away by how good it was.
I've had these before.
Yeah. Because I love coffee. It's okay to me.
I mean, I remember when I was working in the city some people would have these.
Yeah.
But I never like really, I think I had maybe a couple times. I was never like really drawn to buying them. Mm-hmm. I feel like the labeling used to be very different too. I used to remember it being like bright yellow. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
Maybe I'm wrong. I can't remember. So let's see. Yeah, Rome 1925 gold medal, whatever that means, since 1895. Yeah. So that's when it started in the United States.
I could see there being nostalgia kind of tied to something like this.
I had a teacher. His name was Mr. Ottaviano. He used to drink so much chocolate soda. Not this one. It was a different brand.
What is chocolate soda?
I don't even know. He had in the corner of the room, he had like 30 boxes of like 12 liters, separate liters. It was crazy. He had so much and he would always have it in his big styrofoam container every day, but it must have tasted something similar to this. It was probably like the knockoff of this one.
Maybe.
You know?
Yeah.
This is like for a coffee drinker that doesn't want to have a hot coffee.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, all right. So I could see that tasting good on like a hot day and it's like ice cold.
Yeah.
But.
So we saw a lot of other ones when we picked these up at Uncle Giuseppe's. They had about maybe 8 more flavors. We actually have a couple more of them downstairs, but we only wanted to do 3 today. There was some other Italian sodas. What was that one called? Mole? M-O-L-E?
I don't remember.
It was like marketing. It was actually like more prominent than this one. So it must be a popular soda in Italy. Mm-hmm. This place has so much stuff. Like we could never run out of stuff, but you know, we don't want to just strictly do those. Actually, in the previous episode, we did Trader Joe's stuff. But yeah, let us know what you want us to do. We can do Costco stuff. We can do whatever. If there's something like that you specifically are looking for us to try, maybe that you're having a hard time finding or locating, we would love to do it. I'm not going to lie. I do enjoy doing these. And we are trying to be honest with you. I tend to agree with Tara here. I was expecting more.
Yeah. It tastes like regular soda.
I don't really know how you make that better, though. That's kind of the thing.
No, I don't think
it's good for what it is.
I don't know any other brand that makes like a coffee soda. So it's really just this. So if you want a coffee soda, then get a Manhattan special. But as far as like, I know you really like the cream soda. It tasted like cream soda to me. And the orange tasted like orange.
The orange to me tastes exactly like orange Fanta or whatever. The cream soda is probably the best cream soda I've ever had. Not that I'm a huge cream soda drinker. And this one, I don't really have anything to compare it to because that's the only one I've ever had.
These are using cane sugar, right? Yeah. So it's using cane sugar. So it's better than the high fructose corn syrup, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously we'd all be fine. We'd all be better off if we didn't drink soda. So that's kind of the predicament that these companies are in. You know, you're selling a product that is not really, it's not necessary for your life support. You know, it's not as bad as cigarettes, but it's not like it's something that's good for you either.
Speaking of soda, I actually really like some of the probiotic sodas that are out, like Poppy and Olipop. So if anybody wants us to taste test those.
Yeah.
Let us know.
I'm down for the taste test. So leave your comments, questions, complaints, criticisms, anything that you have for us to podcast@sipandfeast.com. It's the easiest way to reach us. You can also, though, DM me on Instagram with questions, video questions, what have you. Let us know if you want something else for us to taste test. We want to wish you a happy Easter. This episode is coming out over a week before Easter. So we'll wish you another happy Easter in next week's episode. Mm-hmm. Right, Tara? Okay. Because we didn't want to put this episode out the day before Easter. We feel like it wouldn't give you any chance.
Yeah.
So there'll be another episode coming out one day before Easter.
That's right. We don't know what that episode's about yet, but
we haven't planned that one out.
Yep.
We're not that far ahead.
No.
We'll see you next time.